Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Few brands are synonymous with our culture on this island as Tato Chris. It was founded, the company, by Joe Spud Murphy in 1954. From creating the iconic cheese and onion flavour to linking a pint with a packet of crisps, the snack has travelled right across the globe. And now there's a book detailing its 70-year colourful history has been released, with some proceeds going to Alone, which is the charity partner of Tato. And here to tell us all about it are John O'Connor, who's the MD of Tato. Welcome, John. And Jerry Lloyd, who worked in Tato for how many years?
46.
Come on in now to the microphone there and have a chat. Welcome to studio, both of you. You know each other well, then. You've worked together for donkey's years.
We know each other a good bit. Not for as long as Jerry was in what you call a Tato. So he was 46 years. I've just finished 20 years. But we were together for 16 years before Jerry decided that he wanted to spend more time by the beach.
Sorry, which particular beach?
Sutton Beach.
Oh, very good. Yes, not abroad. You keep an eye on it anyway. And as John, you're MD, but you were involved in... What was it? When did you first step into Tato then?
I started in Tato in 2004, at a time that it was owned by the CNC Group.
Yeah.
So I'd been in one division of the CNC Group, and then Tato, they said, will I come to Tato? So from 2004, it's been a very interesting journey, so to speak, since then it has.
It's gone through different hands as well.
It has, yes. Yeah. So it was in CNC at that stage, and that was for about two and a half years. Then CNC wanted to sell the business, and a gentleman called Raymond Coyle,
yes,
of the Tato Park and now Emerald Park fame. Raymond was actually manufacturing product for us at that stage. So he was manufacturing our crisps and manufacturing our snacks. And when CNC wanted to sell the business, Raymond was the obvious one to buy the business. So that was, I think that concluded kind of around 2007. And then it was a great journey and really a big creation of the brand at that stage, in terms of Mr. Tato coming to the forefront, yeah, of being the chairman of the business, for a better choice of word. And then in 2015, we're part of the InterSnack family now since then. So Raymond at that stage decided...
And that's owned by a German family.
Yeah, it's a German family. So like any of these organisations, they're not really PLC organisations. They're family, with about 140 shareholders. And the interesting thing about InterSnack Group, so to speak, is that they're right throughout Europe, across even into Australia and New Zealand. But what different to kind of what you would see in terms of a lot of multinationals, where there's one brand that's in every country across the world.
They don't send one brand everywhere.
They don't sell one
brand.
So what they do is they have worked with the local brands, and then they support the local brands, and they want to make sure that those local brands thrive. So that's the great thing. So that's why Tato is still so front of house in terms of our business here, and will continue to be for many, many years to come.
You mentioned Ray Coyle. I met him a few times. He was a really colourful character himself. Yeah, yeah. There have been all very interesting figures who've been behind Mr. Tato. The first one, of course, is Joe Murphy himself. Mm-hmm. And this is 1954. He said, is he dead a long time?
2001,
I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, he
passed in 2001. So I think he'd kind of stepped away from the front end of the business around 1981, Jerry?
Yeah. Joe was a great character.
In fact, both the guys were very, very similar. Joe was very passionate about the business, very classy man, drove a Rolls Royce, and dressed really, really well.
He grew up in the inner city in Dublin.
Yes, he did, from Thomas Street.
Yeah, and showed flashes of genius as a child.
Absolutely, did as we all did in Dublin, sold the sticks and all that type of thing around town. But he was truly a lovely man and a marketed character. I was very young when I joined the company, about 16. And in those days, you had the senior executive toilets, and I was up there and probably shouldn't have been in the toilets. But Joe walked in and said, "Oh, hello, Jerry, how are you?" And I was shocked that he knew me. But that was the man. He knew all the staff. And he said, "Your mum and dad would have a video recorder." And I said, "Oh, they do, Mr. Murphy. Come into the office and I'll give you a video for your mum." I thought, my God. Yeah. And he was, and by the way, look after my money downstairs, because at that stage I was in the cash office. But I was
incredible. That was your first gig, was it?
Yeah, that he knew at that stage that a kid of 16 where he was in his factory.
He knew everybody.
He knew everybody. It was a key thing about him.
How big was the factory at that stage when you came in?
I was in Coolock, so we had about 400 employees then.
Right, it was
pretty
big.
Yeah, tremendous, yeah. And then, of course, I meet Juxer here, who was over in Cadbury's.
He didn't call me that when we worked together at that stage, but we remained great friends.
John worked in Cadbury's, and so when John came in, it was like a marriage in heaven, you know, the chocolate, the crisps. So it worked. It worked very well.
Tell us about Joe Murphy, John, and where he got this idea.
Yeah, I think Joe, as Jerry said, he was an entrepreneur from day one. So, you know, born in Thomas Street, the father had a builder's providers at the back of a shop. Mm-hmm. At the front of the shop, his mother had really a DIY shop. So she was wallpaper and paint, so to speak. So Joe was always, there was an entrepreneur, as Jerry said, you know, he'd sell bits and pieces of the sticks and so on and so forth. So he started off to an extent in his early 20s as a distributor. So he was buying products in. He's noted as being the first man to bring the biro to Ireland.
Okay.
Yes. So he was selling, what do you call it, kind of products that he was buying in as a wholesaler and a distributor. Lived in Donabate at the time. Mm-hmm. On his way home to Donabate every evening, he would stop in Swords, when you'd literally have to drive right through the centre of Swords. Would always buy a packet of crisps, which were English crisps at the time.
There were no Irish crisps.
There was no Irish crisps, really.
Incredibly, really.
Yeah, there was kind of maybe one or two people dabbling, but nothing in terms of a recognised kind of manufacturer. So Joe would stop in, he'd buy a packet of crisps, which is the Savages of Swords. That supermarket is still there. Not exactly where it is today, but Savages is still there. Ray would buy the packet of crisps Joe would buy the packet of crisps, and every time he bought them, he was disappointed because they were somewhat stale,
right,
because they travelled all across the Irish Sea. So he would buy the packet of crisps, complain about them all the way home, and the next time that he would come into Savages, he would say, they were stale. I think the lady in Savages got so fed up with him saying this, she said, well, why don't you go and make your own blooming crisps?
And she picked the right man to say it.
She picked the right man to start it. And that's how he took a view and he said, look, there's something that I can potentially do here. And O'Reilly Parade, which was just right around the corner from the GPO, he rented two rooms, believe it or not, a bathtub, vegetable slicers, and a fryer like you would have in a chipper.
Yeah.
And that's how we started off. And he had four employees, and that was 1954. And you know the story ever
that's
since,
the brand,
so to speak.
And with a little packet of salt would be with it and you'd add it yourself.
That's what it was, yeah.
But he started toying with the flavours.
Yes, he did. He had Mr. Burke, who was the chemist that had come in to join him. And Joe was very much into trying to add something different because there was no other company in Europe with a flavoured crisp. And between himself and Mr. Burke, they came up with the famous cheese and onion flavour.
Yeah.
And nobody knew that flavour except Mr. Burke and Joe. So it was a kept secret, locked away. And
the first crisps in the world to be flavoured.
First flavoured crisp. Well, not the first flavoured crisp, because I think there probably would have been, as we said, about the salt was flavoured, so to speak.
It
was the first ones that was the cheese and onion offer. And it was purely by mistake, as Jerry said. Seamus Burke, who was one of the first four employees, and Joe had set out to make a cheese-flavoured crisp, but also an onion flavoured crisp, but found himself one day with the old stock control being slightly out of kilter that he had a bit too much onion flavour. So he said, let's throw a little bit of onion in with the cheese. And lo and behold, they started to create a wonderful cheese and onion flavour. And as Jerry said, Seamus was the scientist, hailed from, the west of Ireland over towards Sligo way. And Seamus was set to task to kind of get the balance right, get the mix right, get the secret formula
right. It's extraordinary,
right.
In the 50s, isn't it? The experimenting.
1954.
And what's sort of a bag within? It's a paper bag, is it?
Waxy bag at that stage. And it used to be sealed by Bernie Kane in the factory.
Bernie Kane,
Bernie used to seal
it. She's a legend of Tato.
Absolute legend, yeah. Bernie, in fact, passed away there in August this year.
Sadly.
And very sadly. And, you know, the ethos of the company was there. There was, I know, four guys sitting beside me with over 160-year service.
Really?
You know, and her, and
extraordinary
yeah,
history.
Yeah, absolutely. And having read the book about Joe, his family, when he passed away, throwing packs of crisps into the sea. At Bernie's funeral, her family gave out packs of crisps as we came out of the church.
Really?
Yeah.
That's how much it meant to her.
Yeah, yeah. It was unbelievable what the company meant to her.
She was literally gluing the bags with jars of glue.
Yeah, she was. We've come a long way. We have, Oliver, since then, because at that stage, your listeners may be slightly horrified, the bag was sealed with wallpaper paste. So at the top of the seal was a little lick of wallpaper paste across with a brush, sealed, and Bernie would lovingly look at her creation at that stage. So I'm glad to say we've moved a long way on since then. We have. There's no wallpaper paste involved at all within the ceiling of our bags.
Crisp was huge, really straight on, wasn't it? And it developed and expanded very quickly.
Yeah,
into different locations around
it started from very, very small beginnings, as
you
know.
Already played, yeah.
And what do you call it? It was literally that they were tin boxes in which you'd put the bags of crisps in.
So if you went to the shop, it was stored in a tin.
It was stored in a tin, and if you asked for your packet of crisps, the packet was taken out of the tin, and this was sold. And then the tin was, you had to return the tin to Tato.
Oh, right.
So it was like remember the old soft drink bottles, the mineral bottles, where they were glass, and you'd get a deposit.
So that slowed down the process a bit.
It did a little bit. So, but it literally took off, and it was a phenomenal success. And, you know, Joe was a fantastic marketeer. He was a man before his time, and we hear the term guerrilla marketing now, but he was doing guerrilla marketing before it was even a term that was known. And everything that he would try and do in terms of just trying to drive the awareness of the brand was fantastic. And he's some great stories about that. The Tato van would accidentally, on purpose, supposedly break down in the street.
In very busy junctions.
In a very busy junction and sit there for a couple of hours, so to speak. And when there was always a good football final or a hurling final on in Croke Park, Joe would send the trucks out and they would drive around Croke Park and people would turn around and say, how many trucks have you got? You must have hundreds of trucks. It was probably only a couple of trucks. So he was really clever in terms of his marketing at that stage of the brand, you know.
And Mr. Tato is there from very early on, isn't he? There's a picture of the oldest known packet.
Yeah.
And he's there with his hat and everything.
He wasn't there on the first pack, Jerry. I think it was about a year and a half later that he came, but he was literally only in the corner.
Yeah, yeah. And he was just there in the corner. He was a drawing from one of his kids.
Is that right?
That's where he came from, a potato head. Yeah. And it grew from that, and it became, obviously, over the years, much, much more prominent, especially later in Raymond's time. But, it was amazing from that point of view.
The Dapper. And the illustrated ads in newspapers really took off the branding, didn't
it? Yeah, I mean, there was no TV at the time that Tato was launched, so to speak. So everything was about the printed media. So he would always put ads in the back of the Irish Times, where you used to have the classified columns.
Yeah.
So he would have lots of ads in the context of that. And even to an extent, you mentioned about having a packet of crisps with a pint. That wasn't a thing that was known back in 1954. It was
no food.
People went in and it was just, we'll have our pint and we'll have our cigarette. And that's all we need at that stage. So Joe was trying to promote, the consumption of crisps. So it was like, you can put it on your food, on your salad, you can put it in a sandwich, you can, what do you call it, have it with a pint. And that's how it started to kick off this whole element.
All those early ads seem to be people nipping off after dinner to have their
absolutely
late night snack.
Yeah. Supposedly going to the shop, but actually nipping off to the pub for the packet of crisps.
And they use the ashtrays and beer mats and so on.
Beer mats and everything. Yeah. So all the advertising was it was low key, it was guerrilla marketing at a time when, as I said, it wasn't there, and anything he could possibly do. And some of your listeners might know, and on O'Connell Bridge, the Lafayette building.
Yes, that's the building you see when you're heading southwards.
Yeah, yeah. So it literally kind of splits where Westmoreland Street is. And for, I think, probably 20-odd years, Joe had a sign up on the side of that building, which was a real clever play, because I think the only other major brand that was on it was a cigarette brand, and sorry, Aer Lingus was on it. But for 20 years, that was on that building, Tato. So if anyone wanted to take a picture to signify Dublin or Ireland, it was O'Connell Street.
Yeah.
So the chances were that it was going to be seen along there. So, yeah, clever advertising.
Likewise, Croke Park, behind the goals, iconic,
exactly.
Mr. Tato.
Yes.
Mm. So if you look through footage in Michael O'Hare, you'll see Mr. Tato at the back of the goals, which was tremendous in that sense. And he had a great pride about his van and his sales guys. The van had to be washed every day going out.
Is that right?
Okay. Sales guys. We had van sales guys going around the country in tailored jackets with Mr. Tato on it, shirt, tie and grey pants.
Had to be very well turned out.
Had to be turned out, absolutely, as was Mr. Tato himself.
As he was, Spud Murphy, Joe Murphy himself. Describe what he looked like to people if you met him in the heyday.
Oh, you would know him. He was very dapper. He'd walk in anywhere. He was very prominent, he got out of the Rolls Royce, and one of his tactics was to go into a shop with the Rolls Royce parked outside.
He'd
and
pull
say,
up on a Rolls Royce
oh,
outside
absolutely.
A shop and go in.
Yeah, absolutely. He would have called to Colm Gallagher there on the Malahide Road at Fairview, and he'd go into Column and he'd chat for an hour in there. He was very...
He'd go to shops who didn't know him, didn't he?
Yes, absolutely, and call in and say, do you have any of those, what are they, potato chips? Or, oh, my kids were looking for them. And, no, never heard of them. And a van would come a couple of hours later into the shop selling potatoes.
And they would go, oh, we had a man inquiring earlier on.
Correct.
But these must be popular.
Yeah.
Until they started to cop on that there's some guy going around
in a Rolls Royce.
I'd say it was easy to spot.
Asking for crisps.
And who was his wife? She was involved as well, wasn't she? Somewhat. She had a...
Bunny, yes. Yes, yes, she was. She was involved in the company over the years. And his daughter Yvonne and Barry... they would come into the factory, yeah. So they're very much part of the ethos. It was a very much a family company. And over the years, I'm 46 years there, I would consider it a family even to this day. You're part of the team. I meet with sales guys every 6 months. That between us, the six of us meet, I think we've about 200-year service. So it's just typical of the brand. And from time to time, we might ring in and say, lads, there's something, we didn't see any potato, cheese and onion somewhere, and let the guys know. So it's just a family. It always was. And I remember going into a conference there one Christmas, and they were talking about on the radio, there was 500 Christmas trees produced that year, and 50,000 were sent off. That year alone, Tato had produced 750,000 Christmas boxes. That was in 2018. I don't know what it is today, John.
It's a little bit higher now. It is. It's such an iconic thing.
It costs more as well.
It's like your tin of biscuits. So we produce about 1.25 million boxes for Christmas every year. The famous Christmas box,
the Christmas box.
And if you take a view that there's only 5 million people in the country,
I see what you mean, yeah.
You know, it's kind of one in every five, or even in households, it's kind of one in every second household would have a box of Tato in it, so to speak. So it's a real connection with consumers that Christmas time you've got to have your box of Tato.
He was a great man for a gimmick. There were quizzes, sports sponsorships. There was a Tato baby competition.
Very much about community. About community. And I think that was one of the clever things as well, is that because you didn't have kind of TV at that point in time, it did come, and Tato were one of the first advertisers. But his sense was if you can build a brand within the community, and we're still very focused on that today, so you connect with all the local areas. So every GAA competition, every singing competition, amateur dramatics competition, chess or whatever, there was a Tato trophy. There was a Tato cup for that. And Jerry, you would have known a lot of those.
And the community games was very big in the 70s. He was forefront at that. He always appeared there himself, Joe.
Yeah.
And all the senior management team had to be down at the Mosney, which was a great event. And I think anybody in their 70s would remember the great days down in Mosney, which was all Mr. Tato. You know?
And modern as well, because we're in an election season now. We can mention him because he's not currently running.
I don't know. Yeah. You never know.
He ran.
He was done it before.
Once was enough. Once was
2007 was the campaign that Mr. Tato allegedly ran in.
It was the first time that... Raymond Coyle had owned the business at that point in time, so it was the first kind of major campaign under the ownership when Raymond was there.
Yeah.
And prior to that, Tato was well advertised, as you say, mm-hmm. with Joe, but it was the product, it was the brand that was advertised, it was crisps that were advertised. And fortunately, for us anyway, the Taoiseach at the time, Bertie Ahern, called a snap election. Mm-hmm. We were trying to figure out what sort of marketing campaign we would do, and all of a sudden we said, put him in for election. And that was the craziness and the mischievousness of what we would do. So put him up for election. So he ran for election. Frank Kelly of Father Ted fame was his election agent, Mr. Tato doesn't talk. He's afraid to be misquoted, so to speak. So Frank led the campaign. And ever since then, Mr. Tato has been...
It was a very funny campaign.
It was a very funny campaign.
On stamp duty, he said, there should be no obligation to buy stamps.
Yep. Or what does this cabinet look like? Well, it should be solid mahogany with gold inlays. Yeah, there was...
So Frank Kelly was the spokesman. He was kind of the PJ Mara character.
Exactly.
And said, class sizes, big issue. They should be under 12 foot by 9 foot.
Exactly.
And that was a huge hit. Did that actually work in terms of sales for...
It was amazing because it connected... The Irish love the crack, And that's the difference in terms of when you've got a brand that's a local brand, you can have fun with it. And that's where we really kind of reignited the fun of the brand with Taylor. So, yeah, really connected with what do you call it, with consumers. Sales did very, very well out of it. And during that period of time, Taylor was the most Googled name.
Is that right?
In Ireland at that point in time. So
that election. Really, during a general election.
Yeah, it was incredible. But those people painting their cars down the country, they were following Mr. Tato. None of the local TDs wanted Mr. Tato near them because everybody went to him. Now, he may have been given a few bags of crisps out as well, which may have helped. But
he also won a few spoiled votes, I think.
That's a way of putting it.
I think one commentator said he was probably the most credible politician that there was up for election at that stage. Or not politician, but running to be a politician.
Listen, there are loads of memories coming in text, but what we're going to do is take a quick break and we'll come to those in a second. Back in a moment. Lots of messages coming in, and we're still here with John O'Connor, who's MD of Tato, and Jerry Lloyd, who's been there 46 odd years. I remember back in the 1970s sitting in front of the fire and being able to shrink an empty Tato bag to a miniature version using the heat of the fire. This is John in Dublin 15. And this is mentioned in the book. This is what people are sticking a pin into it and driving mammies mad all over the country.
That's one that we don't like to talk about too much, and we wouldn't recommend any children to do that now.
And using it as a badge. But the 70s, there was little joy around other than doing those things. This person said, I have great memories of my first summer job in Tato and Coolock in the 80s, working on the packing lines. 52 bags in a box by hand as fast as you could. I learned so much there about work and people. Thank you, Niamh. Jerry, that's definitely in your time.
Yes, it was indeed, yeah. It's funny when you go into the factory and the way people worked along, they had to have breaks every half an hour and the girls come out. Yeah. But it was, if you could get on the first line in Tato, that was the real one because that had the most flavour. That's where pub crisps were actually made.
Oh, right.
And people used to say, oh, pub crisps flavour is much nicer. Absolutely much nicer. It's slightly different. The only difference was it was the first line. And so if you were going for your lunch and you needed some crisps, you'd say to Gareth, can you get me the first line?
Did staff get free crisps?
We did indeed. We got two packs every day. Yeah, every day going home. The Gareth's factory got two packs, and then in the office we could get them at the end of the week. So, yeah.
Bring them home to the family and so on. Seamus Burke, the inventor of the cheese and onion flavour that you mentioned, he came from Clunacool in County Sligo. The Mill Community Cafe in the village proudly serves Tato sandwiches.
I love it.
In his honour there.
Thank you very much. And they actually have a plaque, I understand. Well, I've actually seen it. They have a plaque in the village celebrating Seamus and his association with Tato.
I was going to ask, is there a plaque down on Theo Rahilly?
There's not. There's not. Mm-hmm. But there's an idea now. Thank you all.
Oh, God. For that.
Yes.
Enough marketeer.
This person says, I was born in 1954 in a pub and I can still taste the Tato from that time. It came in tins in the taste, so they had the tins.
That's correct, yeah.
And there's a story there, isn't there? Because the tins then became polythene-lined cardboard boxes, was it? And then there was...
Yes, they
the wallpaper paste went out of fashion.
Yeah, it was fairly before my time, but yes, they had a polythene bag within the box when it first started, when they moved from tins. Because the problem with the tin was down the country, they didn't want to pay an extra deposit because it was £5 deposit and £5 for the crisp, but you got your £5 back when you gave the tin back because the tin, we had to get them back for production.
But they sorted it out. This is a question I'm curious about as well because I know, would you ask your guests what variety of potatoes Tato use for their crisps, please? I've always been curious. Have they stuck with the same variety over the years?
Great question. We don't use one specific variety. So because the season, the length of time that we need to have potato crisps, we use different varieties. But crisps that are potatoes that you use for crisps are very different than what you would have with your dinner. So we call them crisping potatoes, obviously. So we use varieties like they're called the three ladies, Lady Claire, Lady Sassy and Lady Joe, kibitz. But the great thing is that, so we just can't go to the market and just buy anywhere our potatoes. We have to buy them from farmers. So we have about 10 farmers, 10 to 12 farmers all around kind of the eastern seaboard. And they're second generation farmers with us. So they supply us with 30,000 tons
of
potatoes every year.
Supplying second, in the 50s as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Second generation. So they supply us with 30,000 tons of crisps every year. That's 10% of Ireland's national potato crop.
Because it was really in the book, it talks about Joe Murphy using carrots pinks because he thought they were the best. But even a bit of frost would affect the
crisps. Absolutely. So temperature is everything. You want perfect. You don't want too much sun, but you want a bit of sun. You don't want too much rain, but you want a bit of rain. more we kind of have to move
so
on.
So the crisps now would taste very different to the ones they would have had. You'll have to do a vintage selection of.
There you go, John.
Wouldn't agree with you on that one, but they taste good.
Different. Yeah, actually, Rita from Sligo is actually on the line. Rita, good morning to you.
Good morning, Arthur.
You're in that cafe, aren't you? The community cafe.
Yes,
I am. The Mill Community Cafe.
There's 20 volunteers run the cafe.
Oh, volunteers. And why are the volunteers, for instance?
It's a community-run project, really, to provide a meeting place in the village. So it's kind of friendly, available to everybody, very low prices, very good food from local bakers. And we created it as a meeting place in the village we live in. It's a tiny village.
It's a tiny village, and but you're, it's a community-based thing. And it's you have great honour for Seamus Burke. He's on the walls and so on, is he?
Yeah, we only discovered the link with Seamus. Like, we knew his family, people. I would have known Seamus's brother and nieces and nephews, but we happened to meet a nephew of his about 10 years ago, who told us, you know, my Uncle Seamus created the flavour. And we all said, what? So
we have to honour this somehow.
A few of us got together and we have put up information boards in the village, kind of the Clonacool connection with Seamus, and we put up the plaque. And then when we opened the cafe about 6 years ago, we on our menu are tato sandwiches. Plain classic tato sandwiches.
Plain classic. Is it white bread, brown bread? Do you have any specific?
White bread, butter and tato. And we fancy little serving boards, so we cut up our sandwich and you get your little handful of tato on the side, and they're really popular. We have kids who come in on Sunday morning and it's a mug of hot chocolate and a tato sandwich.
That is
I'm very tempted to get in the car after this interview and head all the way up to Sligo. But one thing that we would love to do is, I think that cafe needs a book, Mr. Tato's book. So we'll certainly get that up to you.
You'll send it up.
I think Seamus is there's pictures of Seamus in it, and there's great some story. And his niece actually helped us with an awful lot of the narrative about Seamus.
We know Fionnuala. We're in contact with Fionnuala, so we know her. Yeah. So lovely. We would love it. And we actually have a little shop in our cafe, so we might even be able to buy a few books and sell them.
A very well-dressed man in a van as per the honour of the company. That's Rita Norman Lee. Thank you so much, Rita. And good luck. And we'll have to take one more break just before we go. John and Jerry, we're just out of time, but we must mention a loan. Some of the proceeds from this book are going. The story of Tato, the original Irish crisp by Bobby Ahern. It's out in all the bookshops. It's going to a loan. A lot of people are texting in about the Northern Tato, Freeze Tato, Armagh Tato. Joe Murray, he sold the licence basically, didn't he, in the 50s?
Two years after he established he sold to the Hutchinson family.
And they have it to this day.
They have it to this day. And you know the difference. They're a yellow pack with red. Wear red, white, and blue.
Yeah, you want to shout out to your colleagues in Ashbourne, where the whole operation
is. Just to say, Oliver, that we're here today, but we're only here today because of all the people who have been in this organisation for the last 70 years. And, you know, currently we've got 400 staff up in Ashbourne at the factory and all of our sales teams. So just a call out to them and a thank you to them for everything that they do to support us.
A lovely success
story. And to our customers.
Yes, indeed. And please consume your Tato responsibly.
Absolutely.